Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. For the second day of our musical Legends Get Better With Time article, we meet Neil Young, a Canadian folk artist. Hi friends, welcome back to Advanced Studio Classroom. For the second day of our music article, today is April 26th. I'm Naomi Beesavel, and joining me once again in the studio, first of all, Bill Quinn, welcome back.
Hi Naomi, it's great to be back. I love this article talking about the music legends, and today is really interesting talking about Neil Young.
Are you familiar with him?
Very familiar with Neil Young. I grew up with Neil Young. I mean, not in
literally?
The same, not in the same neighborhood playing baseball together, but Neil Young playing in the background. His albums were always playing in the background as a teenager in my older years, yeah.
Yeah, and also joining us is Nathaniel Dunn. Nathaniel, you're also familiar with Neil Young.
Yes, I am. I am familiar with Neil Young. I enjoy his music a lot. This article is going to talk about a documentary about him, which is actually the third of kind of a trilogy of them. And when the first one came out, is kind of when I caught on to Neil Young.
Okay, so without saying too much about anything too personal, Nathaniel's quite a bit younger than Bill, and yet both of them are big fans of Neil Young. And I think that's a great example to show just how much lasting power he has had in his musical career.
There is a certain texture to his music in that he has never bowed down to fads or what is popular at the moment. And he is always just focused on what his gift is. And the thing is, because of it, he has been rewarded by creating songs that still, they sound the same today as they did 40 years ago. And they, you don't listen to them and think, oh, that sounds old. They don't.
Right. Yeah. He's quite timeless.
Yeah.
And again, he is a very influential part of basically my favorite musical genre, which is folk. So I really value him for that, too.
Okay, that's a great point, too. So often, for me, what happens with this kind of thing is I'll hear a newer band do a cover of a song, and it'll be my favorite song on the album. And I'll mention it to someone, and they'll say, oh, didn't you know so-and-so wrote that? You know, 30 years before. And I feel like that's the kind of artist that Neil Young is, where everyone continues to sort of learn from him and try to imitate his style. Yeah, but then when you discover that he was really the original, then, of course, you fall in love with his music, too.
Yeah, so much of his music, he uses an acoustic guitar. Mm-hmm. And there's something about the acoustic guitar. It's going to sound good whether it's made today or 20 or 40 years ago. Mm. Now, as an example, if somebody made a disco song 30 years ago, all right, if we listened to it today, we would think, oh, my goodness, that's so old and out of style. Whereas if you played an acoustic guitar song by Neil Young that was made 40 years ago, you don't know if it was made 40 years ago or 4 months ago.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. All right, so Neil Young, worth listening to. Do you have any suggestions for someone who's trying to get started on Neil Young? What should they listen to?
I definitely know Neil Young more single by single than album by album, but I would suggest one of his biggest songs, I think, Hey Hey My My. I would listen to the electric version and the acoustic version. You can find both of those. I would listen to both of those just to compare.
Okay. Bill, do you remember what you kind of heard from him to start?
You know, I'm going to go back, way back in near the early part of his career. Two things. He's been a member of so many groups, it's hard to believe. But in 1966, he was with Buffalo Springfield and Stephen Stills, and they had a great hit, For What It's Worth, which I think a lot of people would recognize once they hear it. So go on YouTube, search For What It's Worth by Buffalo Springfield, or CSNY, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and Teach Your Children Well. And everybody will recognize those songs.
All right, nice. Now, the one Neil Young single that I always recognize is Heart of Gold, so you can check that one as well. But as you start your Neil Young education, we'll begin with our article. So let's begin with our first reading on page 39.
Neil Neil Young opens up in Wistful Documentary. It's only fitting for a documentary about Neil Young to venture to Canada's Northern Ontario region, his birthplace, and the subject of a song. It certainly stays alive in Neil Young Journeys, a spare and intriguing film directed by Jonathan Demme, who has helmed two previous Young concert films. Here, the 66-year-old rocker pilots a 1956 Crown Victoria through his rural hometown, casually pointing out a school named for his writer father, Scott Young. But he has somewhere else to be, Toronto's Massey Hall, site of his solo Lannoy's concert tour stop in May 2011.
So if Neil Young is this classic singer, then why is he in the spotlight once again? Well, we discover as we begin with our subhead today.
It's for a documentary. We see the first sentence here. Well, the title of this part of our article, Neil Young Opens Up in Wistful Documentary. When I hear wistful, I usually think thoughtful and probably also a little sad.
Right. So if you are reminiscing, if you are thinking back in time, you are remembering things from your past, then you might feel a bit wistful. Even if they're very happy memories, you're a little bit sad that those days are gone. And so it has that kind of feel, that nostalgic feel of going back in time.
You're not going to listen to Neil Young and think, oh man, this is pumping me up.
Well, yes.
That's not his style. He's not going to pump you up. He's going to make you think.
Right.
So now, why is it wistful? We kind of get into this here in our beginning of our reading by saying it's only fitting for a documentary about Neil Young to venture to Canada's Northern Ontario region. And it makes sense going back with him. And I'm picturing this as we move through this.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have been to Canada's Northern Ontario region, and it's pretty, but it's a little cold and it's a little, I mean, there's a lot of nature. There's not a lot of skyscrapers in Canada's Northern Ontario. So small towns and a lot of them kind of look similar. It's pretty, but I can see it having that little bit of a sad feeling too, where things seem a little bit empty, a little bit quiet. Definitely very thoughtful, thought-provoking. Mm. So they venture up there for this documentary. Now, why are they talking about it as the subject of a song?
Well, actually, the first line of one song is, there is a town in North Ontario, which is the song Helpless. It's probably one of his pretty big hits, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's fitting. It is appropriate for them to head that way for this documentary. So this area stays alive in Neil Young Journeys, which is what?
That is the name of this documentary. And we describe this documentary as a spare and intriguing film. Now, first off, spare, there's not a lot of special effects in here. You won't see explosions and chases and computer graphics. It's just nature, maybe following Neil Young around. So a minimalist approach,
okay.
Even.
No extras.
Right. And then intriguing, it makes you think. It gets your interest up. Like, what's going on here?
Right. So what is going on here? Who is Jonathan Demme?
Jonathan Demme is a movie director. You might actually have seen some of his movies. His most famous is probably Silence of the Lambs. But he has directed all three of these documentaries about Neil Young, some of which are concert films. And I think this one is kind of part concert film and part documentary, like Bill said, following Neil Young around his hometown.
Okay. And this type of movie I always really enjoy watching because it gives you that concert feel, of course, which is nice. If it's a musician, you want to see them perform. But it also shows you behind the scenes, what's happening on the way, where are they coming from, what are they thinking about, are they writing something new, you know, and so it's very interesting to watch. Jonathan Demme, of course, has helmed these two previous concert films. If you helm something, it means you're directing it, you're controlling it. So in this case, what's happening?
Well, we enter right into, you know, a spot right there in the film. We see in line 18 here, the 66-year-old rocker pilots the 1956 Crown Victoria through his rural hometown. So he's just driving. He's not flying. He's driving this 1956 Ford. It's a huge car that it just fits that he's driving this old car in this old town. It sets the stage.
Right.
Yeah.
So he's piloting that car. I should point out that really in this area, you couldn't really fly anyway. There's no airports up there. Or if there are, they're very small. Everyone drives here. So he is driving along to his concert. But on the way, he's pointing out, he's giving a bit of a tour of this area of Ontario. Oh, here's where I grew up. Here's my friend's house. And, oh, that's the school named for my dad. His dad is a famous writer, but he has somewhere else to be.
Yes, he's going to Toronto's Massey Hall, which is where he's going to have this big concert. It says the site of his solo Lanois concert tour. He's stopping there in May 2011. So this is a little bit ago when this documentary was made.
Okay, so he's on the way to a gig. He's getting ready to perform, and he's driving along and giving a little tour. So interesting way to really connect with this guy, not just sort of get a faraway picture of a celebrity, but to get to know him personally.
Very real. You said you like documentaries. I like them too, Naomi, because, it shows a real side of the person, mm-hmm. Driving along in the car, getting out, going into the barber shop, things like that, stuff that real people do.
Right. Okay, so by now, you're probably curious, what does he sound like? What is this all about? What makes his music so great? Well, let's continue with our second reading to figure out his appeal.
Simply appealing. His distinctive alto voice has become seasoned over the years, conveying all the power imaginable in his lyrics, underscored by a range of emotional urgency from his guitar licks. Young performs simply with a guitar and harmonica or piano. The music is haunting. His storytelling has always plumbed the depths of the emotional landscape. Artistic integrity is a recurring theme. There's something appealingly wistful about both the concert and Young's hometown tour. Down to earth and affable, Young recalls key moments in his youth, but doesn't mourn the loss of it. Similarly, he doesn't skim the cream from his vast catalog of songs. He chooses a deeply personal mix of old and new, each song exploring fascinating emotional terrain.
So he does have an appealing sound, and in this section of our reading, we sort of try to explore why that is. How do we describe his voice?
His distinctive alto voice, that is really unique. And you either like it or you don't like it, mm-hmm. because it's very unique, and it's a really high voice for a man.
Right, which is why that word alto kind of jumps off the page at me, because usually you think of a choir separated into four sections. The two male sections are bass and tenor, and the two female sections are alto and soprano. So to hear a man's voice being described as alto, it's surprising, but I would say his voice is equally surprising when you hear it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think we're going to let our listeners listen to his voice a little bit later so you'll see or you'll hear for yourself. But it really is very unique, and it's also described as saying it conveys all the power imaginable from his lyrics. This voice is actually very, even though unique, it's also very expressive.
Right. It's an unusual voice, but there's a lot of power to it. It can bring a lot of emotion.
Yeah, and because it's also his lyrics that are so, uniquely written. He's very deep with his lyrics, but then also it's underscored by a range of emotional urgency from his guitar licks. And I had mentioned that a lot of his songs he uses an acoustic guitar, sometimes an electric guitar. And what he does when he writes his music is he actually will provide room for solos. And it's actually very striking, a lot of the guitar licks or the guitar solos that he has.
Mm, okay. So, and they're also very emotional. And here they say emotional urgency. And I think that's a nice way to explain it.
Yeah, of course, if something is urgent, it feels like something has to be done quickly. And that's an interesting way to describe some of his music. I think some of it's a little more easygoing, not so urgent. But some of it, especially maybe when he's trying to really push a current message, you might feel more of that urgency in the guitar.
It's like he really has to get the emotion out through the music. Now, he performs simply. It's no frills, much like this documentary.
Yeah, it's amazing. With a guitar and harmonica or a piano. So he might be up there playing the guitar. And use, of course, there's like an implement you can put on to play the harmonica at the same time.
You can see it in the picture, I think.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think he's got it there.
Yeah.
And it's a one-man show.
Right.
Really, you know, and the beauty of that is it's not just a lot of noise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is great. I mean, when you go to a concert and it's just the performer and an instrument, it's incredible. One of my favorite concerts I've ever been to was a favorite singer of mine who usually travels with a whole band, but she was just on the piano. And I was amazed. I mean, it was beautiful. And here they describe his music as haunting.
Yeah, I think when something haunts you, it doesn't sound pleasant, though I wouldn't say that his music isn't pleasant, but it kind of really fills you up and you really think about it for a long time after. It just really stays with you, haunts you.
Yeah, the music almost sort of hangs in the air even after things are finished. You feel that mood kind of come over you. And his storytelling, we also move on to.
We see here a term, plumbs the depths, and that's actually an idiom. This is interesting. It says to reach the lowest point of the emotional landscape. So in many ways, it's kind of sad. Melancholy is a word I would use for a lot of his songs and lamenting of things.
Okay. And there's another recurring theme, another kind of idea that keeps coming up in his music.
Artistic integrity. I think Bill touched on this a little bit earlier. He's not playing anybody's game. He's going to write the music that he wants to write, say what he wants to say with his music. And that's artistic integrity, staying true to yourself, really, I guess, as an artist.
Okay. Well, let's hear an example of it as we listen to one of his most well-known songs, Harvest Moon. As we continue, our article says there's something appealingly wistful about the concert and the hometown tour, but I would say that applies to his music in general. Appealingly wistful.
Yeah, making you think about things in the past. And, of course, his concert does it, but then, of course, his hometown. You know, for him, it's probably a sentimental thing for him to be driving around his hometown and thinking, man, this is where it started.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting that it's appealing too. You know, often artists get a little moody, right? Like they get a bit down. And so some artists, when they try to convey this kind of emotion, they get quite dark and depressing. And he doesn't. He's still very likable. He's still, like when those, when we just heard that song, Harvest Moon, it feels kind of friendly. You know, like he's kind of smiling through what he's explaining.
Right. And the next sentence, it describes him as down to earth and affable. And I think the reason that his music doesn't seem like kind of a punch in the face when he's talking about these sad emotions is that you can really relate to him. You're on the same level. He's down to earth and practical and likable, which is what affable means as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting as we go on that he recalls or he remembers these key moments in his youth, but doesn't mourn the loss of his youth.
Oh, I love this. I underlined this. I want our listeners to highlight it. Also, don't mourn the loss of things. And he acknowledges the past, looks back on it fondly, but he's not sad about it. He's like, well, that was it. Okay, I'm now here.
Right.
And that's the past.
It's almost a similarity with him and Anita Baker, actually, where she's got that similar perspective of saying, hey, it was great, you know, but I'm not going to dwell in pain. I'm going to add some sweetness here. He's got a similar thing where he says, hey, yeah, that's past, but that's okay. Life's still good.
Very matter of fact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Way of living. So, and instead of, you know, it, also in addition to not mourning the loss, ties into this next part. Mm-hmm. Similarly, he doesn't skim the cream from his vast catalog of songs.
Okay, so skimming the cream, you have to think of a farm where you milk the cow and take the cream off the top because it's the best part, and you leave just the plain old milk to use for other things. In other words, some people like to take out the very best of the best to sort of show off. But he's not just picking the songs that people love the most. He's not picking his most popular crowd-pleasing songs. He takes a variety.
Right. He's choosing old and new, a personal mix of old and new. So he's going to play some of those songs that his fans will recognize, but he's also going to bring in some stuff maybe that he's written recently and showing that, you know, I'm still relevant now with what I can tell you now, not just what all the stuff that you've heard from me before.
Mm-hmm. And they explain that each song then explores fascinating emotional terrain, which is a nice way to put it because they're actually exploring some fascinating Canadian terrain as they mm-hmm. drive along, aren't they?
Yeah, and so it's a double meaning there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he's going to cover a lot of different ground and make people think and feel when he is playing the music.
Okay. Before we go, let's find out a little more about the film.
The film. Demi is clearly fascinated by Young's musical integrity and wants the audience to share his passion. Neil Young Journeys underscores the continuing relevance of Young's artistry over the last 45 years and why he is regarded as one of rock's most influential musicians and songwriters. The introspective tales of his youth are an artful counterpoint to the urgency of his musical selections. He doesn't tout it or even refer to it, but Young endures. He hasn't burnt out, and he's certainly not rusting or fading away.
So back to the director of this documentary, Jonathan Demme is clearly fascinated by Young's musical integrity and wants the audience to share his passion.
Well, you know, clearly fascinated means he is really interested. I imagine John Demme probably grew up also listening to Neil Young albums, probably has been a lifelong fan of his musical integrity, the ability of Neil Young to stick to his style, not compromise, and still be successful.
Mm-hmm. So it's like he wants to make that love of Neil Young's style contagious to the audience. He's trying to get them on the bandwagon. Mm-hmm. He wants them to catch the fever and really enjoy Neil Young as well.
The interesting thing about this is John Demme is not making this movie to make a lot of money.
No. Mm-hmm.
That's not the reason for it.
That's a good point.
Yep.
All right. So Neil Young Journeys, once again, that's the name of this film. It underscores something. And if you underscore something, it's like you're making it that much more important. You're trying to highlight it. Just imagine underlining something with your pen. And what is that?
He's emphasizing or underscoring the continuing relevance of Young's artistry over the last 45 years. He's showing that this is an artist that still speaks to our time. He's not just a 60s musician or a 70s musician. He still speaks now.
Mm-hmm. And that sort of goes back to what you were saying before about him being an influence on a whole genre of music.
Mm-hmm.
So he's still relevant. People still care about him. And also why he's regarded as or seen as one of rock's most influential musicians and songwriters. All right. So the introspective tales of his youth. Introspective?
Introspective means to look inside of yourself and to, you know, ask questions. What's going on? Why do I feel this way? Why do I think this way?
Okay, so he's got these tales of his youth, and they are an artful counterpoint.
Yeah, and counterpoint is actually a good word here because it's a musical term, but I would understand it as something that kind of contrasts and compares. So you're hearing two different parts of his background or of his style because you're hearing about his past, but also you're hearing that urgency that we talked about before. Something needs to be done, sometimes is what he's saying in his music.
Okay, and that sort of brings us into something important, and that's a contrast with yesterday where Anita Baker was saying, oh, well, I'd love to be a political voice, but that's just not my style. That's not true with Neil Young.
No, he is very comfortable addressing political issues of all kinds. Mm-hmm. I had mentioned the one song, For What It's Worth, that was like a protest song against, you know, controlling people's ability to, you know, express themselves through protests. He wrote a song called Southern Man that was about racial inequality in the southern part of the United States. He also wrote a song about Kent State called Four Dead in Ohio, where young students were shot for protesting. So he's always been around the political subjects.
Right. For him, he says, okay, I have this ability to express myself, so let's express some things that are important. Let's get a message out there that people need to hear.
Right. And yet, we look at the next sentence. He says he doesn't tout this. He doesn't even refer to it. He just keeps going, you know. He wants people to notice these things that are standing out to him, that are important to him, but he doesn't want to be self-referential.
Right. He's not really showing off. He's right. Not sort of saying, hey, everyone, look at me.
Well, you know, what's interesting. I mentioned that one song, The Four Dead in Ohio. He doesn't sing that anymore because, as he says, it's past. And it's not relevant anymore. He made his point. So, but I really love this last sentence of this article.
Okay.
He hasn't burnt out, and he's certainly not resting or fading away, which is a connection to the song I mentioned earlier, Hey, Hey, My, My.
Yeah, the lyrics say, hey, hey, my, my, rock and roll will never die. It's better to burn out than to fade away. So you better to burn out than fade away. And also, the name of the album is Rust Never Sleeps.
Okay. All right. So is it better to burn out than fade away? What do you think?
Well, I mean, if you have to run out of energy all of a sudden rather than, you know, taking a long time to get worse and worse, I could agree. I think it might be better to burn out than fade away.
Okay. Bill?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Oh, yeah. Definitely. No doubt. Better to burn out than fade away.
Okay. Man,
make every day great and...
Yeah.
That's the way it goes.
Live life to the fullest.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Don't give up on things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, tell us your thoughts on that sentence. Is it better to burn out than fade away? Do you agree or disagree? Tell us on our Facebook page or at studioclassroom.com. And yeah, you can find us there. We always love to hear from you, and we always love to get letters as well. So don't be shy. Send us an email, letters@studioclassroom.com. And don't forget that we have one more day tomorrow, so come back then.